This is DGMT's Learning Lunch, and I'm your host, Rahima Esop. On today's deep dive conversation, we are talking about putting children first. I'll start with an interesting statistic. Today, one in six adults in Brazil and Mexico has a bachelor's degree, compared to one in 12 in South Africa. Brazil and Mexico have lower unemployment rates than South Africa, but let's be frank, poverty and inequality are persistent in those countries. That said, what have these countries done to ensure their labor markets are more skilled, while ours unfortunately remain stuck? For starters, they focused on improving the health, education, and nutritional status of children. Investing in early childhood development is one of the most effective and efficient steps that a country can take to disrupt cycles of intergenerational poverty, reduce inequality, and promote the development of human capital. Nutrition, early learning, access to books and stimulation, and safety are some of the building blocks for future success. To talk about the type of public policies and interventions that other countries have pursued and what we can learn from them, I'm joined by my guests, Kentse Radebe, Innovation Director at DGMT, Senzo Tlope, who is the Head of Partnerships and Impact at Ilifa Labantwana, and Shazli Saval, who is based at the Department of Psychology at the University of the Western Cape, and he is a board member on the International Society for Child Indicators. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, Rahima.
Hi.
Hello, Rahima.
I want to return to the comparison that I made at the start of this podcast. In my introduction, I spoke about Mexico having done well to improve outcomes for children. Starting in the 1990s, Mexico identified caregivers in need and gave them cash transfers to spend on their children's education and health. The result? Improved school enrollment and nutrition rates. Since then, this program rolled out in Mexico has been replicated in other countries. Then in 2016, Brazil launched the Happy Child Program, which included home visits to pregnant women and children and initiatives to strengthen healthcare, education, and children's rights. Then you have Chile, which began setting up a system for child development protection and promotion in 2007. The Chile Grows With You program allows low-income households free access to nurseries and preschools and guaranteed antenatal care. The similarities between these three programs are clear. We need to support pregnant women, they need access to antenatal care, and we need to focus on nutrition in the early years of life. Senzo, I'd like to start the conversation with you to provide big picture context. You are the Head of Partnerships and Impact at Ilifa Labantwana. Ilifa Labantwana translated roughly means children's legacy. So why are we talking about children and children's development in the same breath as we talk about the labor market and unemployment?
It's useful to understand this conversation in a context of talking about human capital development. Simply put, human capital formation is that if South Africa is to invest in making sure that we give every South African a right footing to start, is we have to start young. And I think for South Africa, it is quite important to invest early. In isiZulu, we call it umuthi ugwetshwa usemanzi. A Chinese proverb equivalent of that expression is the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. And this is important in a South African context where we are currently experiencing high level of unemployment, high levels of inequality, whether it is in service provisioning, income, household dynamics, all of that. And the first opportunity we would have had as a country to reset those trajectories would have been 20 years ago. It's not all lost. There are still opportunities now to reset that journey for South Africa, and that is in investing in children. The Heckman Care, for example, which is what we use now to make this case, really demonstrate this quite strongly for South Africa as to why we must invest early.
Thanks, Enzo. You referenced Nobel Prize winner for economic sciences, James Heckman, who said that early childhood development is the most powerful investment in human capital that a country can make. And yes, a lot of the work the DGMT does is based on that particular research, the idea that investment in children early will reap returns not only for society, but the economy. Kense, to use the sort of phrase that Senzo used about the best time to start is 20 years ago, and if you didn't start 20 years ago, start now. If we had to start now, what type of public policies do we need in South Africa to ensure that we are focusing on the key things that the other countries that I mentioned in my intro are doing to support pregnant women and a focus on nutrition in the early years of life?
There's three things that I want to speak to around the kinds of policies that I think we need, learning from what some of these other countries like Mexico, Chile, Brazil have done. And the first place that I really want to start and to acknowledge is that in the South African context, we actually do already have these policies. So, for example, when we're talking about the National Development Plan or the National Integrated ECD policy of 2015, a lot of these policies speak to how do we prioritize the development of children in South Africa. But I think there are a couple of things that we're not getting right. Even though we have these policies that speak to this, we actually don't have the political will to back up what we say we want to achieve. So what we've seen over the years is that we keep talking to our poor reading outcomes. We keep speaking to stunting levels in South Africa. But what we haven't done is thought about what would it take for us to implement and institute changes that would mean that a child in South Africa is directly impacted by these services wherever they are growing up, whether it's a rural area or an urban area or a peri-urban area. So what we actually need to do is to take these policies and to ensure that they're actually speaking to each other, that there is an integration and a recognition of the complexity of how these public services land in place and in community. So maybe a good example to share to illustrate just how difficult some of this work is. So in South Africa, we have what we call the child support grant, which is currently 530 rand. And we know that that isn't enough to meet the needs of children, whether it's access to food, education, or even the needs of their own caregivers. But what we know is that currently in South Africa, it has been one of the most successful interventions driving or addressing poverty alleviation at the household level. But what we know in South Africa is that actually less than 50% of children under the age of one are accessing the child support grant. So what that means is that we have this opportunity, this tool, this child support grant that could be making a real impact in how children are born into households where they're able, where their caregivers are able to provide the right kind of nutrition, the right kind of support, but a number of them are not accessing it for largely bureaucratic reasons. So when you dig a little bit deeper into, well, why is it, you realize that during the pandemic, we had a reduction of services in our hospitals by the Department of Home Affairs. So, and that was largely due to some of the lockdown regulations. But we also see that there's been a lot of migration in different provinces. So, for example, individuals moving from the Eastern Cape to the Western Cape or from KZN to Gauteng. So that often means that the system isn't able to track those births between the different provinces. And then you also have socioeconomic challenges like access to transport, money to be able to go to the Department of Home Affairs to be able to ensure that your child is registered multiple times, because we know that this is, can be quite a lengthy process for parents. So what that ends up doing is that parents then get stuck in a context where their children don't have a birth certificate. But we know that actually it's not just the Department of Home Affairs that is responsible for delivering this. It actually takes the Department of Health, Department of Home Affairs, as well as state agencies like SASSA. So what we actually need to do is to acknowledge that in order to get a birth certificate in South Africa, there are a number of gates that you need to pass through as a caregiver. And these sometimes intersect with different departments operating at different levels, whether that's provincial, whether that's national, whether that's district level. So if we're thinking about integrated services, we need to be able to take that level of complexity into consideration. So this would apply even to education. this also applies to nutrition. So I think the kinds of policies that we need are already there. But what's happening is that we haven't acknowledged the complexity and I think the hard work that it would take to deliver those services, which include access to early learning, which include support for caregivers, and ensure that we're creating a continuum of care. So a policy that almost elevates this work and thinks about the different pieces and how the pieces of that puzzle fit together and the journey that a child or a caregiver would have to walk in order to access those services. And I think that's what Brazil and Chile and even India have done really differently, is try to make that much more simpler and easier.
I think that's really useful, and I just want to pick at what you've just said a little bit more. It sounds like there's a coordination problem, and I know Senzo doesn't like the phrase coordination or the term coordination, but it sounds like there is a coordination problem. So what do we need to do to accelerate delivery and to improve synergy?
Maybe just to start off with Senzo's apprehension of the word coordination, because we know that it's actually more than just coordination. I think what we've realized is that it's coordination and implementation, but also acknowledging that a lot of the decision making happens at a national level, but implementation happens at a local level. So we need policies that actually speak to what does it look like when a program lands in place. And then I think specific in relation to early childhood development, I do think that we do need an accelerated program that focuses attention on the key building blocks that we need for children to thrive. Call it an agency, whether we call it an institution, whatever it is, that has the mandate and the authority to pull together these different departments and agencies that are responsible for delivering child outcomes and set very clear goals, a clear mandate, and I think most importantly, have a recognition from the key political actors in our country that this is what we're getting behind. This is what we're backing. And I think that's why it's more than just let's have the right policy. I think it's also how then do we start engaging the public about what are we saying is the child development agenda for South Africa. And I think that's why some of the examples that you shared earlier become so critical, because they also illustrate how possible it is to have a campaign built around some of these outcomes that we want to achieve, so that the average man or woman on the street also knows that actually when I'm engaging with the Department of Education or I'm engaging with the Department of Transport, this is how they view children and this is what they're elevating or prioritizing.
Senzo, what are the pros and cons of an autonomous agency in bringing a program that puts children first to life?
The work that we do is not just about solving the supply question. It's also about solving the demand question. And by that I mean is we can talk all day and night about the importance of ECD and its services and brain development. But for as long as South Africa is not conscious, is not well aware of the services, of why those services are important, then all of this work adds no value. So things like public campaigns, to the point, Rahima, you were making earlier on, that Kenta also made earlier on, what other comparable countries have done is having a recognizable national branded program of action for children. The last part is that in South Africa today, and this is quite an important thing, and it speaks to resource mobilization. You need an autonomous agency that is able to issue the confidence to private donors, to international donors, to be able to deploy their funds to say we want to drive a specific outcome. It is easier if you have an autonomous agency to do that compared to deploying those funds into a government department, because once it's there, you have no control over it. Similarly for government, is because of public finance regulatory framework, states can't just take money out of its public purse and put it into a private institution without proper guidelines. So to have an autonomous, well-respected, equally recognized by both the government and non-state players is the solution that the country needs right now. And that will allow us to be able to do all of these things we're talking about. And And I think that's why an autonomous agency is then needed. For South Africa, as a last point, it's not the first time we've had to deal with these kind of topics. During COVID, we had a solidarity fund as an example of what that looked like. When we had a COVID-19 crisis in the country, solidarity fund was able to attract private money and get public and leverage public funding to deliver PPE materials into many areas across the country. During HIV/AIDS endemic days in the early 2000s, we had South African National AIDS Council doing that for the country. During the early years of our democratic dispensation of government in 1994, we had the RDP and the RDP Fund doing that, in which it was even enacted in law. So for South Africa, it's not the first time.
One of the pros of having an autonomous agency driving a national program for children is that it can synthesize and share data. Currently, there's no centralized data center on the state of young children in South Africa and the services that are provided to them. Why is this so important?
It will be a fruitless exercise to say, let's tackle maternal and child health if we don't know service provisioning in maternal and child health. The first question should be how bad or how big or how small that problem is, simply put. That's one. So data for planning. The second part of using and why data is important is then it helps with making decisions. So data for decision making. And here we're talking about making decisions on which part of the country needs maternal and child health services. Data should be able to tell that. How much money to allocate and for what in maternal child health are we falling behind on? Data helps decision makers to adjudicate on budget, to adjudicate on resource allocation, not just for government, but even for civil society, for grant makers to know where to focus their efforts. So that's the second point. It's data for decision making. And then the third piece, it's literally data for mirroring back to the country how bad or how well we are doing in relation to achieving the goals we would have set for ourselves. And that's why we need publicly available, easily synthesized and disseminated information that helps all of us as a country to be able to do exactly that.
Shazli, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now because this is really your area of interest. I'm curious to know how researchers are thinking about the questions, how are children doing and how do they feel about their lives?
Certainly, we are looking for collecting what we refer to as objective data. And objective data refers to, for example, the different types of health statistics. When we refer to, or when we ask about how children are doing and how they're thinking about their lives, we're asking about subjective data. And this is the self-reported perspectives and reflections and evaluations that they have about their overall life and different aspects of their life.
Thanks for explaining the difference between objective data and subjective data. Why is it important to know both?
So objective data and subjective data refer to and reflect complementary but distinct aspects of the well-being. If we want to have a comprehensive understanding of how our children are doing, we need data from both aspects of children's lives.
What have you learned about what is important for children?
Over the past 20 years, we've had an opportunity to engage with children from different population cohorts between the ages of 6 to 16 years old. And we have an opportunity to go to and engage with children from urban and rural provinces across the different regions and across the different provinces in South Africa. The number one aspect that children have consistently put forward as impacting on their well-being would be the issue around safety. Safety within their home, their perceptions of safety within the community and the neighborhood, and safety within the school. The second issue that they've identified was material deprivation and poverty, and how lack of access to certain resources, lack of access to certain opportunities have negatively impacted on their lives and well-being. The third aspect that children have identified consistently as impacting very positively on their lives was the nature of the social relationships. Relationships with parents and guardians and family members, with their friends, but also very importantly with those in the community and those within the school system, such as teachers and principals. Children also identified opportunities to learn and opportunities for education as being very, very important for them. In fact, across an international comparative study, we found that children in South Africa ranked access to learning and importance of learning as one of the most important aspects impacting positively on their lives. The final issue, or the final aspect, would be children's sense of autonomy, sense of self-determination, and sense that they are being listened to by adults in society. Children have this affinity that if they've been taken seriously, that they've been listened to, that overall the overall well-being is markedly improved.
So Shazli, tell me, what will it take for children's voices to be included in public policy and in a national program that's focused on improving their lives?
So over the past 10 to 15 years, I would acknowledge that South Africa has made reasonable progress in the collection of what we refer to as objective indicators. And there has been some progress made in researching children's subjective positions, and this is steadily increasing under the child participation or child-centered research agenda. However, it is important that we note that, and with some commentators even lamenting the lack of quality of available services for children, regardless of the extent to which rigorous data has been made available to inform social policies, legislations and programs and so on. However, what obfuscates this further is at what point in the process does a disjuncture take place? You know, is it located between data and social policy, or is it located between social policy and service delivery? So what child-centered child participation research does, it leads to improved quality of data. It acknowledges and improves the active role that children can play. And even once we have the data has been completed, what role can children then play? So we need child participation, child-centered frameworks that align to program development and also align to service delivery and evaluation of services for children. And this would then allow for meaningful insight beyond just collecting data with children. So child-centered programs could assist policymakers, could assist researchers, and really to determine what does the data really mean? Have the social policies have been developed based on this data? Does it accurately take into account children's voices? And then importantly, have the services been appropriately aligned to reflect these social policies? So are the services reaching children? So this is what the child participation, child-centered research can tell us. And to what extent are these services actually benefiting children? So our argument, of course, is that children need to be involved in all processes, from the collection of data, from the design of the research study, to the actual interpretation, to the development of programs and policies and services, and then also in the evaluation of these programs, policies and services. And this we refer to as authentic engagement and authentic participation.
Kense, a question for you. Our listeners are largely from civil society. What is civil society's role in promoting a national program for children, or to just put children first?
Government cannot do this work alone. I think what's important about what we've said in today's conversation is that government needs to be driving this work. But however, we all need to set the agenda and buy into the agenda together. So I think for me, the role of then civil society would be to locate themselves and to identify where they would be plugging in gaps. And historically, we've seen how civil society has shown up and has been part of leading and galvanizing society. So that's the role that I see for the civil society sector. And if anything, if you feel like the work isn't necessarily strongly aligned to maybe a program that you're running as a civil society organization, is then understanding how a national program of action for children also benefits the work that you're doing or uplifts that work, or how your work can uplift that as well. Thanks.
It's clear that the global landscape for early childhood development is diverse, dynamic, and brimming with innovative solutions. From Mexico to Brazil and Chile, each country has carved out its own unique path towards a more coordinated and effective early childhood development strategy. So as we wrap up today's discussion, let's remember that the journey towards optimal early childhood development is not a one-size-fits-all endeavor. It's about understanding, adapting, and integrating the best practices from across the globe into our own communities, ensuring that every child has the opportunity to thrive. And now, over to you, those listening to this podcast. Using what you have heard today, you can try this reflective exercise. You'll need a pen and paper to write down these steps, or download the takeaway sheet from our website, dgmt.co.za. You'll find it under the resource tab. Write down the following questions and spend some time reflecting on them by yourself, and then share your reflections with your colleagues. Question number one. What are you or your organization doing to put children first? Question number two. Irrespective of your area of work, what can you or your organization do to improve synergy and accelerated delivery? Question number three. Do you think that you or your organization are learning from the experiences of other countries? If not, how can you improve on that? This has been DGMT's Learning Lunch. Until next time.